Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach David Bartke here. It's Thursday, September 21st, 2017. Continuing our ongoing exploration of Abraham Hicks's Ask and It Is Given. We're on chapter 5 this week, David. The simple basis of understanding makes it all fit together. We were talking before the show. That's a weird title.
It is, and I'm looking forward to hearing what it's about.
What it's about, yeah, because the title doesn't tell you much, does it?
No.
So let's just jump right into it.
Let's jump, not dump.
We prefer to jump, not to dump. So jumping right into it, I'll read the first paragraph. It says, there is a current that runs through everything. It exists throughout the universe, and it exists throughout all that is. It is the basis of the universe, and it is the basis of your physical world. Some are aware of this energy, but most humans are unaware of it. However, everyone is affected by it. So now at least we have some idea of what this crazy, unusual title is all about.
Yes. And for someone just listening tonight, what do they mean by most humans? Because they may think, who are they talking about?
Oh, I don't know. I think probably most humans would say, what energy? What's this current you're talking about? So I don't know.
No, most humans. So people just know that we're quoting Abraham, who's channeled through Esther Hicks.
Oh, I see. Your point being that they are non-physical beings.
Yes.
That is a key point. And
because someone could hear that and be like, what are they talking about, most humans? Who are they talking about?
And if you're confused about that, I strongly suggest that you go back 5 episodes and start at the introduction so you can catch up to where we are.
That would be ideal.
Would be ideal. So let's look a little bit more into this. Second paragraph. As you begin to understand the basis of your world and you begin to look for, or better said, feel for, your awareness of this source energy that is the basis of all things, you will then understand everything about your own experience. You will also more clearly understand the experiences of those around you. That's a rather ambitious claim, actually, because, I mean, I'm not so sure that, you know, being aware of this source energy has actually done a whole lot in terms of my understanding about my own experience. I have pushed myself to learn more about my own experience and understanding, but I don't think the awareness of the source energy really helped much at all, to be honest. If anything,
well,
it threw a monkey wrench in.
However it helped you, I guess they mean your fellow humans are also going to be helped in that way as well.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. This whole idea, though, of a current running through everything is, and we've talked about it before. We've talked about it in terms of being vibration and how everything vibrates. We've even talked about physically how science is able to measure vibration in everything. And I guess the sort of question that this answers is, what is it that's making it all vibrate? Well, it's this current that's running through everything. It's called an energy here, and I think energy is probably the word we use most often to describe it, amongst ourselves, certainly here on the show. And more and more people, I think, would describe it as an energy. Here, the book calls it source energy. But it's really not energy in the way we tend to think of energy, is it? I actually think there is a certain identity between source energy and electrical energy, for instance, but it's really not the same thing. I mean, electrical energy is electricity, and we're not talking about the same kind of electricity as runs through the walls. There's at least some difference.
Yeah. Source energy to me is more of like a God energy.
A God energy, you could call it that.
Source to me means the source of everything, God, so source energy.
I think it's probably accurate to say that within our science, we actually know very little about this form of energy.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of forms of energy. I mean, all the energies that we know about that physics can measure are variations on the speed of light, and perhaps this is another variation on it, another wavelength, so to speak. But I suspect it's actually something more, something quite different. I mean, it's certainly true that light is an expression, perhaps, of source energy. I think that would be true. I mean, how many religions refer to the light, right? But I think it's actually more than light. I think there's something else to it, and I don't know what that something else is. I hope that science discovers what it is someday, but I definitely think it's there.
Yes, but they're saying that a source energy runs through everybody, through each of us.
Through everybody and through everything.
Yes, yes.
It is the basis of the universe. That's their second sentence. And when we say the basis of the universe, it's as fundamental as atoms and molecules.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, like, when you're at a high vibration, high energy, it affects other people around you as well in a positive way. It kind of like, oh, like I think vibrations and high energy can do that. Like if we're at a high vibration and we walk into a room with friends, they tend to kind of experience that with you and kind of rise to that as well.
Yeah, I guess that's the whole point. If it's a high vibration would mean something that vibrates rapidly, or as compared to something else that vibrates more slowly, so that would be
right,
a high vibration.
Right, you kind of feel that. Yeah, you can kind of feel that based on how you feel. Like if you're feeling really excited and happy, I tend to think that's a high vibration. That's kind of like the fast vibration.
Certainly, when we feel excitement, that is obviously a form of high vibration, and it's also a vibration that we feel that has,
yes,
has sensoriness to it, you know?
It feels good.
It does feel good, yeah. It feels good, and it feels energetic, and you can hardly wait for the next moment to come in time because it just fuels you.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
Whereas the opposite, the low vibration, doesn't feel nearly as good.
No, not at all. Yeah, and we spend an awful lot of time in that other vibration as a species, as a series of societies around the planet.
As we learned with law of attraction, we can always choose to change that.
We can, and that's the good news. That's the really underlying wonderful message that's in all this, that despite what it is we have grown up with and been taught and learned through our experience in society and so forth, we can choose something different.
Isn't that a big relief? I find that a big relief. Like
it
like,
is.
I just want to sigh like, oh, yes.
Yeah.
that sounds really
it's
good.
A very big relief. In fact, I was having a conversation just today, the day that we're recording this, with someone who, I won't go into all the details, but he knew somebody who was going through a very serious drug addiction. And so we were talking about that. And one of the things that we noted in that experience that he had, and that indeed all drug addicts and alcoholics and anybody else who abuses anything else that you can possibly think of,
right,
they all experience the same thing, which is an inability or perhaps even a lack of awareness of the option of changing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's addicted to something is stuck. They're stuck in a mode, and they either can't or won't break out of it.
Yeah.
And that's
what
we call addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the really amazing thing and sad thing and hopeful thing all wrapped up into one is that they can choose differently. And in choosing differently, they can gain different experience. They can actually, they can escape addiction, among other things.
Yeah. Yeah. And even just the general person can do something to change how they think. Even just to feel a little bit better, a little bit higher vibration is good. Like if you're feeling really low, just because you don't get yourself to like a yay high vibration, that's okay. As long as you get yourself a little bit more than you are, and then maybe later on you can get yourself a little bit more than that, like gradually.
Well, many of us are perfectionists, aren't we? I mean, we want to go from A to Z instantly.
Yes, but especially with vibration, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's like, depending on where you are, even if you don't get yourself to a high vibration instantly, but you get yourself higher than you were, that's still great.
The other thing that is really intriguing to me about this whole vibration thing and about, you know, this energy that is the basis for all of the universe is when you live with it day to day and you live with it consciously, you're aware that it's there, and now you're trying to make sense again of this world that you already know, but from the new perspective of what this source energy is suggesting to you as a theory or as a philosophical basis, or even as just an underpinning of how things were put together. When you're dealing with it consciously for the first time, or even for if you've been consciously dealing with it for a while, it has a different feel to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in that different feel, the more that we experience it, at least for me, I'll speak for myself on this, the more that I experience it, I find myself looking deeper into everyday experiences in terms of how this experience manifests itself. Let me give you an example, because that sounds kind of airy-fairy, so let me try to be more specific about it.
Okay.
I find that particularly when my vibration level is not as high as I would like it to be. I can always feel it when my vibration level is higher. We just went over that very nicely. But when my vibration level is not as high as I would like it to be, and indeed I get into one of those negative vortex, not necessarily something that's dumping you into deep depression, but it's just something, it's one little that's irritation after another, right?
You're human. You're allowed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all go through that at various times. I had that day. That was my day today, actually. And I don't want to replay it, but that was certainly my day. But I guess what I'm saying is, when I look at what happens during that day, I notice that every step of the way, I have two things going on from the perspective of understanding this as being a universe that is based in this source energy. The first thing that goes on is that I realize that every moment that I'm experiencing, we'll call it a melancholy kind of experience, I have an option to change it. And at the same time, I also find that I am, in a sense, addicted to not changing it, which is both compelling and frustrating at the same time. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that I notice about it is that I realize more and more that every time that I am experiencing something somewhat negative, and wishing I could get out of it, I find myself reminding myself more and more, even the negative experiences have a silver lining. And I can't always find it. In fact, very often I can't find it. Today I was stretching. I was really reaching, trying to find, well, at least the weather is nice. I was trying to find something to feel good about.
No, a lot of times just going general like that works for sure.
Well, I can't say it worked, but it did make me conscious. I guess that's what I'm trying to say here. That I am more and more conscious that every moment where I have put myself, and I'll take responsibility for it, every moment where I have put myself into a feeling of somewhat negative, I have an opportunity to turn it into positive by looking at the other side of it. That awareness of that has... Well, it frustrates me, but it also challenges me, and it makes me feel like somewhere along the line here, I'm going to be able to more consistently climb out quicker if I can just keep finding those silver linings.
Yes, and sometimes it'll happen quicker than other times as well, but just the fact that you're trying to reach for some better thought,
right?
That's the key. That's the key, and sometimes you'll feel it more than others, but any movement up that vibration scale is good.
But I guess what I'm saying is, even if I don't find it, it's like the old saying, it's not the destination, it's the journey. In this case, the journey is, this moment I reached for it and I didn't get there. But the journey isn't over.
No.
So I can try again. And I can keep trying, and I can keep reaching, and I can keep, even when I'm sliding down, I can still reach up. I can still do it every single time if I really want to.
Yeah, and it's possible that when you do that and you don't feel like a big difference, it's possible maybe you raise yourself just a touch,
Possibly more than I realized.
Because you were aware enough to try it, which is still wonderful.
Yeah, well, it is wonderful. I mean, it took me years to get to this point. I'm not kidding either. It really did.
It didn't happen overnight.
No, it didn't happen overnight. It was.
It takes a lot of practice.
It does.
It takes a lot of practice.
And indeed, it's one of the points that that Abraham Hicks makes, not in this chapter so much, but in later chapters and actually in other works that the Abraham Hicks Foundation puts out, which is that the more that you focus on this stuff, the easier it becomes over time.
And it's kind of like a muscle. You get used to it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
And they do kind of touch on it here in the next section. I mean, let me read the next section. It starts with a subhead. A consistent formula gives you consistent results. It says, like learning to understand the basics of mathematics and then having the successful experience of understanding the results of their applications, you will now have a formula for understanding your world that will always be consistent and which will yield consistent results to you. They will be so consistent that you will be able to predict your future experiences with absolute accuracy, and you will be able to understand your past experiences with a knowing that was unavailable to you before.
Wow.
Now, that's quite a promise that's in there.
That's a bit, yeah, that's pretty major.
And it's really easy to say in your early stages, well, it doesn't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're not seeing the immediate result.
If you don't see that immediate result, that's right.
Yeah.
And yet they're saying, point blank, you will now have a formula for understanding your world that will always be consistent. I know there have been times when I said to myself, yeah, consistently wrong. Consistently not working.
That's interesting, though, that they use that word mathematics because...
Yeah.
Lately, when I've been explaining to people about law of attraction, I've been saying... It's kind of like when you first learn math, if you don't get the beginning part, if you don't understand that, then as it goes on, you're not going to get any of it. And to me, law of attraction is similar. Like, if you don't understand the basics of it and the foundation of it, the more things you hear about it aren't going to make as much sense. That's interesting that they use that word mathematics.
You cued an idea in my head when you said that, because I hadn't really focused in carefully on mathematics, but you're right. And it reminds me of a story that comes from the story of my relationship with my wife. She often struggles with mathematics. I'm actually something more of a math genius compared to her. She'll be asking me, math questions or, I help with the accounting on her business and, various things like that. But one of her complaints slash breakthroughs, if you will, is the realization that one of the reasons that she struggled with math so much when she was a student in school is she was, in her words, never shown the code book. You know what I mean by the code book?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, if you have some sort of mathematical rule that, people have discovered that makes it easy to, add two-digit numbers together or understand primes or, whatever it is. There are certain little tricks that you learn in order to do math easily. And the people who learn those tricks the best are the ones who are usually good at mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And the way math was taught, at least when I was in school, and probably not too differently from today, is that the tricks were explained in terms of explaining how the math held together, how the theories worked and, why A led to B led to C and so on and so forth. Well, I was awake during those sections and many of my classmates were asleep. So it actually made a whole lot of sense to me, but it's also fascinating to note just how few people in society are what I would call numerate, you have an illiterate person is somebody who's not well read, and if they were well read, they would be literate. Well,
right.
A person
right.
who has trouble with math would be innumerate, and a person mm-hmm. who does well at math is numerate. It's amazing how many innumerate people there are in society.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I never did well in math, but thinking back is kind of what I just said, because I never really understood some of the basic foundations
right.
as it got harder.
Well, you did, like my wife said, you never learned the rule book. Nobody ever shared the code book with you. Here's the codes about how you understand, how to understand a word problem or whatever. Because there's an actual code to understanding a word problem. And if you don't understand the code, you're lost.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've heard some people say, oh, my math teachers were fun. And I'm like, fun? I had like the most boring ones. that was part of the problem for me. I would like think about other things because it just seems so boring. So when I heard people actually have some fun math teachers, I'm like, oh man, why didn't I get one of those? But whatever.
It does help when you have a good math teacher, and I've had both. I know what they're both like. A good math teacher and a bad math teacher, they are miles apart. But the reason I brought this whole thing up about the code book, as my wife calls it, is that in a sense, what we've been given with Ask and It Is Given is a code book.
Yes.
We've been given the code book about how to understand the universe, how to understand not just spirit, and physical versus non-physical, but how to actually put it to use in our lives. So, I mean, you mentioned that they mentioned the word mathematics. I hadn't really thought about it before, but that's what they've given us here. They've given us the code book.
That's a good way to look at it.
And it's up to us to study it and to learn it and to try to, you know, figure out the tricks.
Yep.
So anyway, continuing on, it says, you will never again feel like a victim in the past or future. Well, that's if you take the time to learn the code book. Cowering from the idea of unwanted things pouncing into your life experience. That's actually a very active description there. Cowering from the idea of unwanted things pouncing into your life experience. That almost sounds like your prey.
Yeah.
You will finally
pummeled.
You're being pummeled. Yeah, right. You will finally
pummeled
understand
by all these negative things.
Yes, right. Oh my God, here they come. You will finally understand the absolute creative control that you have of your own life experience. And then you will be able to turn your attention to your own creative power, and you will experience the absolute bliss of watching all manner of things converging to assist you in the creation of your own specific desires. Everyone,
that sounds really good.
Yeah. Everyone has this potential, and some are realizing it.
Oh, my. Yeah. Yes. That's great.
Yeah, so you read that, and now it sounds like something you really want to know. It's like they're saying, okay, it really is worthwhile to learn this code book.
Yes. Yeah.
It has a very strong promise to it, especially if you want to avoid those things pouncing in your life experience.
No, I'd much rather be in a state of bliss than the pouncing thing.
Yes. Yes. If there's going to be any pouncing going on, I want to be doing the pouncing, not somebody pouncing on me. Okay, so continuing on, it says, it will be an extremely satisfying experience to identify your own personal desires, which will be rising from the contrasting life experiences that you are living, and to know that each of those desires can be fully realized. That's an interesting claim there. It will be an extremely satisfying experience to identify your own personal desires. Do you find that to be true all the time? Because sometimes I find that's not necessarily true.
Well, it's satisfying to at least know what you want compared to what you don't want, like just in a basic way.
Okay.
You know, like, okay, I know what I don't want. Now I know what I do want. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that's kind of sad.
So it's sort of like a black and white
way.
You
know what you want.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is extremely satisfying experience to identify your own personal desires. I actually sometimes find myself confused about what my desires really are. And the reason I find that I'm confused is because I'll start off with what I think is, you know, my basic desire. This is one I've always had, you know, whatever it might be. You know, I want to have a, you know, large income or something, you know.
Yeah.
But as I start digging into it over time, and first of all, like we were talking about earlier, it doesn't manifest right away. So that starts to create doubt. And then as I start trying to understand what it is that I want that large income for, I find that they're great big missing pieces from my puzzle. Cause I haven't really filled in the gap the way I need to really understand what it is that I'm hoping to accomplish with whatever this thing is. This, in this case, you know, a higher income.
Right.
But without those pieces in there, I'm actually not really spending a whole lot of time focusing on what it is that I want to focus on. And then, so what do I do? If it's something where I have not really filled out the picture, so to speak, very quickly I find myself looking at the lack of money or the lack of the thing or lack of whatever it is. Because if you don't have something to actually focus on and kind of bite into and chew for a while, your mind wants to do something. So it goes off and finds something related. And invariably the related thing is the opposite, the lack of it.
But when you're thinking about the lack of it, what action are you taking to shift it then? Because you know,
well, you're shifting
about
it,
that.
You're shifting it away from you. Is what you're shifting. You're shifting it in any direction except toward you. You're pushing it away.
But I'm saying, when you think about the lack of it, are you then reminding yourself, like, okay, wait a minute, warning, I better focus on what I want because I don't want to continue receiving lack of money.
Well, that's what I've been learning to be aware of in my own life, in my own thinking. You know, I'm getting better at it. But I guess what I'm noting is because we come from a relatively negative set of cultures, not just here in this country, but around the world. There's, you know, we're pretty much all governed by despair and, you know, fear and all kinds of stuff like that. And because we come from that kind of experience, when it doesn't quite go the way you wanted it to right from the get-go and the doubts start creeping in, where does your mind tend to go? Well, it goes back to avenues that it's been treading for a long time, which is things aren't going to work out. Mm-hmm. Whatever the things are, you know, fear.
Fear.
The fear is going to get in the way, and, you know, that's all there is to it. So that's why I say, when they say it will be an extremely satisfying experience to identify your own personal desires, I think that's probably true once you get, you know, that positive vortex going and mm-hmm. you're in that place where everything's flowing. Because mm-hmm. that is true. When you're in that place, it is satisfying. But when you're going in the opposite direction and you're having trouble reversing things, you're having trouble keeping your mind focused on what it is you should be focused on, you find yourself, you know, wandering off into that neverland of despair and fear and doubt and worry and so forth, that's not all that satisfying.
No, but I think you're right what you said, though, in the beginning, like someone who's just kind of finding out about this. Because I know a lot of times when I work with a new client, and I ask them, I'll just play, like, what do you want game? I'll just ask them, what do you want? And then they tell me, and I say, what else do you want? And what else do you want? And then sometimes in the beginning, it gets them upset, kind of like what you were saying, because they don't have that.
Yeah.
So it's just reminding them, because they don't have the tools yet to know what to do with that information. But, yeah, it's true what you're saying. In the beginning, it can kind of have a reverse effect.
Later on in the book here, they have these I can't think what they're called, but they're like practice exercises, little games you can play to you know, improve your ability to move more into the positive zone. And one of them, I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically a checkbook game. You have a checkbook, and every day you deposit. You start with $1,000, and the next day you deposit $2,000, the next day you deposit $4,000, $8,000, keep doubling it. And then the goal is to spend all that money that day. So how would you spend the money? And you mentally decide what you're going to buy with it. That game is a really interesting game, particularly if you speed it up. And by speed it up, I mean the way they propose the game, you do a deposit one day and then another deposit the next day. So you're supposed to do it every single day. My wife and I have actually tried it, playing it out within, you know, like a 1 hour period. So, okay, here's $1,000. How am I going to spend it? Well, I'm going to do this. Okay, now here's $2,000. How am I going to spend that? Okay, well, I'll do this and this. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's $4,000. So you're really actively moving along really rapidly. You know, you're taking advantage of that geometric progression and building up that balance really, really fast. It's amazing, David, how quickly you can get to the point where you're reaching for something to buy. Just trying to, okay, something new I haven't thought of already.
Well, I've done that before. It's called the Prosperity Game.
That's the one, yes.
Yeah. And when you get to the higher numbers, it's just really interesting because you're right. You have to, like I was going online, like, okay, I have $60,000 to spend. What am I going to spend it on today? And it just, I love it because it kind of expands what you think you could have.
Yep.
And like you're writing because what you do it is you write the check out like you're really paying for whatever it is you're writing it about to put you in that vibration of money.
I don't know about you, but what my wife and I ended up doing is we would get up to like, you know, $400,000 or something, trying to figure out how to spend that one. And from that point on, it would be like take 60% of it and give it off to certain people in our family that we love, and then take another 20% and invest it in some real estate. And you know, you're trying to parcel it out after a while.
That's right. But it's interesting what that does, though, because it does really expand.
It does.
What you think you could have because you've never gone that high before with trying to spend that much money in one day.
You realize that when we think about wealth in most situations, we do it very parochially. By parochially, limited to what our own immediate experience is. And when you force yourself to expand beyond that experience by simply raising the amounts, all of a sudden you get a different perspective. That's what I think you're talking about. It's a different feeling because all of a sudden all of your wants have been satisfied. Now what?
That's right.
But what do I do now?
That's right. A lot of people that I've worked with who've never experienced having a lot of money, well, like a lot of times I say, well, if you had an unlimited amount of money, what would you do? Like at first they're like, oh, I don't know. Like after they buy their dream house and dream car.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I kind of start coaching them, then they start getting on a roll kind of if they did have a lot of money. But it is kind of true. Like if you haven't had that experience, it is kind of like, oh, I don't know. What am I going to spend all this money on?
Now, I'm going to bring another concept in kind of from right field to go along with what we've been talking about here, or actually to contrast it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if you were to just throw this concept as we've been discussing it here at somebody new for the first time, and assume for the sake of discussion that this person is well-versed in many of the cliches and popular concepts about money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you'd probably hear as a response, as a rebuttal, if you will, is, well, you can acquire money, but it won't make you any happier.
Yes.
So how do you think that... What's your reply to that? How do you respond to that?
Well, from a law of attraction point of view, though, we're just trying to raise our vibration about money so we can attract more. So we're not talking about happiness. We're talking about attracting money.
And yet happiness is a higher positive energy.
Right. So if I was working with someone with happiness, money might be one of the things, but it would be just one of the things on the list. You know, it wouldn't be the only thing. That's
yeah,
for sure.
You're kind of going in the direction I'm thinking, which is that money and happiness are actually separate subjects.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was just watching an old interview with Whitney Houston because there was a new movie that came out about her, like a kind of like a documentary.
Okay.
And this was after she was very successful, and she said to, I think it was Jane Pauley, the interviewer.
Right.
She said, well, money didn't make me happier. Fame didn't make me happier. She goes, it's just something within yourself that makes you happier. It's not money. It's not fame. And that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, she actually sang a song about that, didn't she? The Greatest Love of All, talking about self-love.
Yeah, I love that song. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, it might temporarily, like, when you buy that thing or you get extra money in the moment, it'll temporarily make you feel like, yay, but that's not something that lasts. So because you have more money.
So that leads to what I'll call the second corollary topic, which is people who pursue money as a scorekeeping thing. And the idea is whoever has the most toys wins.
but there's always someone that has more. So how does that can't work.
And yet people pursue that. There are people who are very well off, very successful, and they're constantly trying to pursue getting that next toy, that next great success that they can trumpet.
That's right, and that alone is just proof that they're not happy with whatever it is they got, because they think they need the next thing.
So the question at that point becomes, is the pursuit of money a pursuit of higher energy and higher vibration?
The pursuit of money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it depends on how you're pursuing it. Like if you're pursuing it in a way that is a blissful way, like you say you're a performer or an artist and that's how you're making your money, then that could be. But just in general, I don't think it is.
Well, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because we're talking about something that's subjective. I mean, all preferences are subjective. They're subjective because it takes an individual person to choose them.
Yes.
In fact, there's a really interesting study that was done. Not so much a study, but it was an observation made by a research scientist. This is a research scientist whose name escapes me. He has an Indian name and very mm-hmm. complex name, you know. But
right.
He works at, I believe, UCLA. I'm not sure which school it is, but I think I know it's a Southern California school, and I think it may be UCLA. And he works with patients who are brain damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, he works with patients whose brain damage is primarily on what are identified as the emotional centers of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this, it's almost sadistic, but it really isn't, this little game that he plays with some of his patients.
Right.
Because in many ways, they seem normal. I mean, they can certainly, you know, interact in society and so forth. It's just that because of whatever the traumatic injury was they had to their brain that affected their emotional centers, their emotional connections are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So this game he plays is he'll say, let's go out to lunch. And they'll say, okay. And he says, you pick. Where are we going?
Mm-hmm.
And the brain-injured patient will say something like, well, we could go to place A because they have some mm-hmm. really great ratings in the newspaper, but they're always really crowded. On the other hand, place B doesn't get nearly as many crowds, but their food isn't as good. Now, place C is good. Oh, but that's like a 35-minute trip. That's too far to go. And then mm-hmm. place, and they'll just go through a litany of all the different places they could go, but they can't pick one.
Hmm.
They can't pick mm-hmm. one because it turns out that in order to express a preference, you have to have an emotional center.
Oh, I see.
Without an emotional center, you can't have a preference.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that when we're talking about a high vibrational level, and we're talking about the emotions that go along with it, we're talking about preferences that come from an emotional basis.
Mm-hmm.
And it also implies a corollary, which is that emotion is directly related to this spiritual vibration we're talking about.
Yes, yes. Well, they always say you can tell how you're vibrating, whether it's high or low, based on how you feel.
Right, yeah, that's the barometer, so to speak.
Yes.
It's a very handy barometer, too, because it means at any given instant, we know exactly whether we're in a positive or a negative vibrational level.
That's right, that's what we talked about in one of the other shows, about the emotional guidance system.
Right, yep.
If like our GPS in the car, we have one within ourselves that can tell us how we're vibrating, high or low.
So if we're feeling good, we're in a high vibration. If we're feeling bad, we're in a low vibration. And
yes.
And indeed, I got a, you know, those notes that the Abraham Hicks people send out by email? You probably got it too. I got it just a day or two ago. It focused specifically on this whole question, on the question of feeling good and feeling bad and so forth. And it made a very astounding claim. It claimed that there are
mm-hmm.
only two emotions, feeling good and feeling bad, and that what we call the various emotions are really just different names for the same emotions.
Mm-hmm.
That,
mm-hmm.
Does that seem true to you?
I think so, but even more than that, I like when and you can't be in both at the same time.
Yes, yes. That's a really key point, isn't it?
That yeah, you can't
feel them both.
You can't feel bad about something and good about something at the same time.
Try as we might. I mean, I don't know about you. There have been times when I have tried to, you know, you try to be the even-handed, objective person, right? On the one hand,
yeah.
On the other hand, you know. But it's true.
Yeah.
You can't focus on both of them at the same time. You have to focus on one and then on the other and kind of multitask them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't
mm-hmm.
really focus on them both at the same time.
And getting back to money and things, like just from a law of attraction point of view, you can spend 5 minutes just focusing on all the wonderful things you do and buy if you had an unlimited amount of money. And in those 5 minutes, you would raise yourself vibrationally.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like a good way to use having a lot of money, to deliberately raise your vibration by practicing it in that sense.
So repeat the exercise again. What would the exercise be?
Well, just to feast on thoughts about what you would do and buy if you had an unlimited amount of money. By the time you spend a few minutes doing that, you definitely feel you're at a raised vibration, for sure.
Because
it feels good to think about, oh, I would buy my dream car and buy my dream home, which would look like this, and I'd take my family on a first-class trip to wherever. And, you know, by the time you think of all these wonderful, fun things you would do with an unlimited amount of money, you definitely feel the raised vibration by the end of it.
So in other words, focusing not on the money, but on the stuff that we would prefer. And in so doing,
yeah.
Focusing on what we like.
Yeah, because most of the time we realize that it isn't the money that we want. It's the freedom. We want the freedom to do what we want when we want.
Right, the experience of it, the feeling of it.
Yes, yes. But I'll say if you use having more money in that way, then it is a vibration-raising experience.
Now, what do you say to people who claim that trying to reach for feeling good all the time is unrealistic and that the most you can ever hope to feel on an ongoing basis is content?
Then I would say they haven't practiced enough.
And
or
why,
they don't know enough. Why, or they don't know enough what to do.
Okay. And what's your... How do you know that that's true?
That it's because they don't know enough or haven't practiced enough?
Yeah. How do you know that the lack of practice makes a difference? What is it?
Well, just from
what's the evidence?
Well, from my own experience and my clients' experiences is that there's a huge difference of how you feel. So when you are someone who has practiced enough and done it enough, and you do feel the difference, you're like, wow, that feels so much better than I ever thought it could. And I just didn't know it because I hadn't reached this high of a vibration ever.
So cutting to the quick, what you're really saying is you and your clients have managed to find ongoing higher levels of vibration that are better than just feeling content.
Yes, deliberately. Deliberately
that,
doing that.
That's the evidence. That. Right.
Yes.
And that's an interesting quandary for the person who claims that the best you can feel is content, because like you say, they haven't tried hard enough, but on the other hand...
Or they don't know what to do.
They don't know what to do, but on the other hand, they also haven't experienced it.
Right.
And that gets down to the real core issue that I think everybody faces when trying to deal with these concepts for the first time, and that is, how do you visualize a feeling or a set of feelings or a set of experiences that you've never had before? I mean,
well,
how do you advise a client who asks you a question like that?
Well, that's where I would come in with the coaching, and I would teach them a process or two and have them do it in the moment. And by the time they practice, they're like, oh, yeah, I do feel a difference. I do feel better. I do feel a little higher vibration just by doing that for a few minutes.
And by a process or two, you mean like the prosperity game, the checkbook game?
Yeah, there's different processes. Some are from asking it is given. Some that I've thought of on my own. But they all do that. They all will make someone feel at a higher vibration when they practice them.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment. I'm going to say, well, yeah, that's great. But you just work with these people for an hour, and then they go back to their lives. How do you know they don't just fall back into contentment after that?
Because I usually talk to my clients once a week, so that the next week I will ask them, well, how was your week? And they're like, wow, you know, I've been practicing the processes, and I really feel the difference.
So you actually have testimony that it really does work.
Absolutely.
You know, at least an individual basis with the people you work with.
That's right. And if they haven't felt that much of a difference vibrationally, then I know that means they just haven't practiced enough, and they know that too. Because a lot of times people will say, well, how often should I practice this? And I'm like, well, how much do you want to feel at a higher vibration than you do right now? And they're like, oh, okay. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, for me, the answer is every moment of every day that I can remember to do it.
Right, exactly. Or how much do you want to attract whatever it is you're doing it about? And they're like, oh, okay, never mind.
And the more
I practice, the better. I'm like, yes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And the reassurance that comes through for me is recognizing that the more I do practice it, the easier it's going to become over time. It doesn't necessarily seem like it in the moment, but when you look back over a course of weeks or months, you notice it's like, wow, it really did actually become easier.
Yeah, for someone first starting, it can feel like a big chore and a lot of work to practice.
Oh, yeah.
But I always tell them, look, when you do, though, it actually becomes fun, and you actually enjoy it because you feel the positive difference.
Interesting you should mention that, too, because in a following paragraph from the book, it says, and it is only through your ability to translate vibration that you are able to understand your physical world at all. In other words, through your eyes, you translate vibration into that which you see. Using your ears, you translate vibration into the sounds that you hear. Even your nose, tongue, and fingertips are translating vibrations into the smells, tastes, and touches that help you understand your world. But your most sophisticated of vibrational interpreters by far are your emotions. So by practicing every day and every moment of every day, we are basically training ourselves to be even more in the physical world. Experiencing every aspect of it.
And to enjoy it more.
And enjoying it more. In fact, that's actually a gauge I use for myself. If I'm in a moment and I can take inventory of my senses and notice I'm appreciating what I'm seeing, I'm appreciating what I'm smelling, I'm appreciating what I'm tasting, I'm appreciating what I'm touching, and I'm appreciating what I'm hearing. If I can do all five of those and notice them all, I begin to realize just how in the moment I really am. And the more that I realize I'm in the moment, interestingly enough, the better I feel.
Yeah, I like the in the moment thing. And there's like a fun game that I teach my clients as well, where you pick a day, and before you do anything on that day, you say to yourself, I'm so thankful I get to whatever it is. I'm so thankful I get to go to the bathroom. I'm so thankful I get to shower. I'm so thankful I get to drive to work in a car that's air conditioned or heated or whatever it is. I'm so thankful I get to go out for lunch or whatever it is. If you could do that a whole day, that's amazing.
Yes, that is true. I'm not sure I necessarily focus on going to the bathroom, but I certainly buy into the rest of it.
But everything, everything. I'm so thankful because, one, it keeps you in a vibration of gratitude. So obviously we're going to attract more things to be thankful for. And it also reminds us, like, wow, that's true. Like, not everyone, you know, unfortunately, not everyone woke up today or gets to be here today, but I do.
It reminds me of a line from the movie called The Rookie. Did you ever see that one? The story about the high school teacher who became a Major League Baseball pitcher?
I don't think I saw that one.
Oh, Dennis Quaid. Definitely see that one. It's a must-see. But he's a high school science teacher in his mid-30s, and he's also the baseball coach of the baseball team. And it's this little town in Texas, out in the middle of nowhere. The town is a football school, like most Midwestern schools are. And yet he's bound and determined, because he's been a lover of baseball all his life, to build a baseball team. And so the football team has this glorious, beautiful green field, and the baseball team basically plays on a sand lot. I mean, they're definitely the second-class citizens. But it's a story of how he challenges his players on the team to play better than what they played before, and to dream and to, you know, reach out and to go for the gusto and so forth. And they've seen him, you know, in the quiet of the night, throwing fastballs, because he was a pitcher who actually tried to make it to the majors and got injured. He never got to realize his dream. Well, they end up making a pact. The players agree that they'll not only play well, but they'll win their local district title if, once they've done that, he agrees that he goes tries out for a major league team as a pitcher.
Oh, wow.
And after like four or five consecutive losing seasons where they won one game and lost all the rest of their games, the year that he makes that challenge to them and they accept it, they win the league championship. They win the district championship. So now all of a sudden he has to go honor his part of the bargain, and that is to go try out to play for a major league team. He ends up trying out for the Tampa Bay Rays, known as the Devil Rays at that time. And he actually impresses them in the tryout, because unbeknownst to him, his fastball has improved over time after his shoulder healed, to the point where he has a 98 mile per hour fastball, which is pretty darn good. And he ends up getting a contract to play minor league ball. Well, he ends up going to the minors, and he makes it up to I think it was AAA, I can't remember which. And at one point, he's ready to throw in the towel because, you know, he's not making much money as a minor league ball player, and, you know, they're behind in the mortgage at home, and his wife is taking care of the three kids, and, you know, he's been offered a job as a high school teacher in a much bigger school district that would make a lot more money for them, and all this other stuff. And his wife convinces him to finish the season out. The next day, he goes in to the club locker room and finds the star hitter on the team, and goes up to him and says, "You know what we get to do today? We get to play baseball." And a big smile on his face. You know, so there's an illustration of that feeling.
Yes.
You know, a feeling that goes beyond feeling, where he's just, he's so into it. So, yeah, he's got all these other things going on, all these bad things. He can't make the mortgage. His wife is struggling. His kids are, he hasn't seen his kids in weeks and weeks. But he found the positive. The positive is, hey, we get to go play baseball today.
That's right. That's right.
And shortly after that, he gets called up to the majors.
Yay.
Yeah. So it's a fun story. It's a really fun story.
Yeah.
It also,
and it just shows that the awareness, our awareness is depending on what we're focusing on.
It absolutely is. And it also has a great conclusion, too, because on the day that he gets called up, it's a very emotional moment.
I'm sure, yeah.
And he ends up calling home to his wife, and he's trying to think of a way to clue her in that he got called up without actually saying it. So he says, you know that blue suit jacket I never wear? And she says, yeah, what about the blue suit jacket you never wear? Apparently there's a dress code in the major leagues. So that's a big moment for them. And then once his kids, his students, the kids on the baseball team, find out about it, they go crazy around the little town, posting signs everywhere saying, come see Coach, because his first game is going to be in Texas at the ballpark in Arlington where the Texas Rangers play.
Wow.
So they get the whole team to go out and buy tickets and go to the stadium and so forth, and he gets in the game, his first game. He actually gets brought into the game later in the game because the Rays are being blown out and they need to get out of an inning, so the manager brings him in and he throws 398-mile-per-hour fastballs and strikes the guy out. And, you know, all of his townspeople who are there are jumping up and down and screaming. Of course, the rest of the ballpark could care less because they're all Rangers fans. But, you know, it's fun. And then after he's done, he goes to the locker room, cleans up. There are reporters, of course, who wanted to interview him because he's this feel-good story about the 37-year-old science teacher who makes it as a rookie in the major leagues. And what does it feel like? Oh, it was everything I thought it would ever be and so forth.
And then
he has this moment with his father, who he had a very strained relationship with. And then, after all that stuff, he finds his wife. They hook up again for the first time in months. They're happy to see each other in each other's arms and so forth. He says, where are the kids? Oh, well, I left them with so-and-so. No, you didn't leave them with so-and-so. Oh, well, they had a little bit of help. And he walks out and finds the whole pile of townspeople all out there ready to congratulate him. So it's like one real good feel-good moment after another.
Yes.
And that's the message. That's the message, the same message they're saying here. The more that you focus on the little good things, the more good things happen.
That's right.
Now, it doesn't mean that they're promising you're going to make it to the major leagues as a relief pitcher. But that's not the point. The point is, the good things happen. You just have to look for them.
That's right. And are happening.
And are happening.
Happening right now. Right now, they're happening.
They're happening as we speak.
That's right. And I mean, whenever I have a client and if they say they didn't have a good week, I say, well, I know you didn't have a good week, but even though you didn't have a good week, what were the good things that happened?
Yes.
And there are always some.
Oh, yeah.
There are always some.
Well, before we started recording tonight, I told you I'd had a rather difficult weekend and you asked me what happened.
Yes.
I said, well, I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on the good stuff that happened. So I'll focus on how great the weather was.
But that's true. What are you focusing on?
It's really true, and it's really important. Because unless you can make that switch like that in a deliberate way, I don't feel necessarily instantly better. But I do feel better now, an hour later.
That's right.
Because we've been spending this last hour focusing on all these positives. And those positives, they accumulate. You know, they pile up.
Yeah, just like there's that expression, we get what we focus on, and it's also true with thoughts. The more thoughts you think about a similar topic, the more come like that. So the more you're thinking about what you want and things that make you feel good, the more thoughts like that you'll get as well. Just like the reverse, when you think about something wrong, then you tend to think of a lot of things that are wrong.
Yes, so you have the choice which way you're going to go at every moment of every day. So we got just a couple minutes left. Let me bring in the last paragraph. That'll be kind of our summation. By paying attention to the signals of your emotions, you can understand with absolute precision everything you are now living or have ever lived. And with a precision and ease that you may have never before experienced, you can use this new understanding of your emotions to orchestrate a future experience that will please you in every way. By paying attention to the way you feel, you can fulfill your reason for being here, and you can continue your intended expansion in the joyful way that you intended. By understanding your emotional connection to who you really are, you will come to understand not only what is happening in your own world and why, but you will also understand every other living being with whom you interact. Never again will you have unanswered questions about your world. You will understand from a very deep level, from your broader non-physical perspective, and through your own personal physical experience, everything about who you are, who you have been, and who you are becoming. Now, that's a wonderful promise in that. And, you know, as we saw in the little stories we were just telling, you can see how that would work.
Yes. Yes.
So, yes. Very encouraging stuff. We only have about a minute left, David. Tell people who wanted to get a little coaching how they can reach you.
Yeah, if anybody wants some wonderful law of attraction coaching to help you attract what you want, to help you feel happier, or maybe you're going through a hard time and you want to get through it in the best way possible, you can go to lifecoachdavid.com. And you can find out there how to contact me.
And any particular new goodies you've added to the site lately?
Well, I added this calendar, which makes it easy to book. I always offer a first free mini phone coaching session.
Oh, cool.
So now I added this calendar, so it's easy for people to book that session. They don't have to call me or email me and go back and forth. They can just go look at the calendar and fill in an open time, and then I call them at that time.
Very good. That's excellent. That's the kind of thing that we're hoping for, because that makes it easy. And, of course, you don't have to go. I mean, you're welcome to call David, but you don't have to do that. You can just listen to the podcasts. So, you know, subscribe to us at loatoday.net. You can listen to us here on PRN. You can also look for us on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and all that. But really the best place is the website, loatoday.net, because that's where you can subscribe. So there you have it. That's how you can continue to explore this and join us on our journey about asking it as given. David, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Same here. I look forward to it every time.
We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.